roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty on a Monday. Sorry, I actually just finished breakfast about 8 seconds ago, so I thought it was good, and then I thought I felt some food jump out as I was doing the intro. Happy to join you guys here. It's fight week, and it's been a while since we've said that. We got not just the card on Saturday, but it's actually a run of fight weeks because not just the card on Saturday. The Wednesday afterwards, we have another fight card, and then we get to the pay-per-view. So it's three fight cards on Fight Island, starting with January 16th, Calvin Kattar and Max Holloway on ABC. Tremendous, right? Then they come back with the Wednesday offering of Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny, on ESPN. Tremendous. And then the following Saturday, January 23rd, the Irishman is back, Mystic Mac himself. He's going to be facing Dustin Poirier. We got a lot of info regarding that fight, by the way. Important info. So it's fight week, fight weeks. I don't know what to call it because it's going to be a nice two-week run after having about a good 2.5-3 weeks off, unless you count Ryzen. But, yeah, we've had some time off, so we're ready to get back into it. So we're going to talk about all those fight cards, and I'm going to give you all the particulars because there's a lot of adjustments in terms of the broadcast partner, ABC. You haven't heard me say that yet in the ESPN era. And then we got a lot of time shifts as well. So I'm going to give you all of that, and then we'll update you on the cards and all the figure fun facts and figures regarding each card, including the status of the five-round main event between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier at UFC 257, along with news nuggets and our guest, Michael Chandler. He's going to join us towards the end of the show. He's the co-main eventer at UFC 257. So a lot to look forward to on today's show. All right, folks, buckle up. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Monday, January 11th.
Habla español, amigo.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
Man, Goz, I was going to take one more bite of the toast because I go, 10 seconds, can I do it? Or am I going to be doing the old spitting a piece of bread out because I didn't do quick enough? So I held back. How's that sound?
That's, I think I would have gone for the toast.
I know. You know, there used to be a show called, not a show, but when Wimbledon, the tennis tournament, used to get towards the end. I think it was before the women's finals and the women's that was on a Saturday and the men's finals on a Sunday. It was called Breakfast at Wimbledon. And it would start off with their, you know, they'd have their tea and their breakfast, but that's what it was called. And I was thinking, can I parlay somehow the fact that I watched the guy's tape spinning back click, lost track of time, and I'm hungry as hell into Breakfast with MMA Junkie Radio, somehow tell this story and see if I can get a pass. And I thought, nah, not good. A guy with Bell's palsy isn't going to be the prettiest guy to look at when he's eating, especially as he's hosting a show. So I put that to the side.
I still would have taken the toast.
Don't make me feel bad. All right, listen, let's start off with this. Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor at UFC 257 will not be for the title, regardless if Khabib opts out of continuing to be the champ. Because the UFC hasn't really removed him as champ. If you ask Dana White, who's your lightweight champ? It's still Khabib Nurmagomedov, despite the fact that Khabib Nurmagomedov told the world he was retiring after he defended his title against Justin Gaethje. Unified, I should say, because it was interim versus undisputed. So I don't know how to read into that because I'm disappointed. I thought if anything, that was maybe the opening to do something last minute. We're 2 weeks away, but they just promoted a title fight on 3 weeks' notice with Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. Now, would it be proper notice? No, but that's your bad. And I still think I just don't see why you would see the division dangling because you got two big name fighters coming off wins, and you would be doing it at a time when one of your biggest names just reaffirmed something he told you three months ago. So why wouldn't you just go, it's for the title, we're running with it? I mean, I don't know. I'd love to know the answer to that.
You know what I was thinking about before the show started was, how many times have we heard Dana White say, when a fighter starts talking about retirement, their head's just not in the game. They shouldn't be competing at this level. Isn't that what Khabib's been doing for like the last couple months? Now, granted, his comes from different circumstances, but he's no spring chicken either. You know, he's had his share of camps and fights. So I just don't understand why they're pursuing this as much as they are. And then if they were to come to that finality that the guy just doesn't want to fight anymore, I just don't understand why you would have a fight for, I don't want to say nothing, but there should be something on the line when you have two big names like that. They deserve it, I think, you know? So to me, it's a little silly. I think it's, at the end of the day, what really gets me is it's just confusing. I don't understand how fans follow the sport. Like our father loves fights and he'll watch MMA, but he's probably like watching these scenarios play out and going, what? Like nothing ever makes sense when it comes to titles and rankings. I mean, I do like what he said that, you know, whoever wins the fight, I think he said if Conor wins the fight, then the highest ranked guy gets him. Okay, well, at least that's something. I think it would have been nice for him to say, and if Dustin wins, he also, you know, same thing. But the whole thing is just weird.
Speaking of our dad, he has gone through that cycle where I think he was fed up with some of the politics in boxing. And MMA was refreshing because in MMA, you kind of would get to see those fights. Some of them took long, like Tito and Chuck took a while, you know, for us to get that one. But if there's one thing the UFC was good at doing was eventually getting you those matchups that you wanted to see. You know, there's also a bunch that we just flat out never got to see, like a Couture versus a Fedor or just a Fedor in the UFC. But for the most part, Dana's kind of, he's made our wish list come through. All right, you guys want Strikeforce? Okay. You guys want the guys over from Pride? Okay, you know, they took a while, but he did get a lot of that going. And he just got his Chandler. That's pretty cool, too. But still, I ask these questions, but I usually know the answer. And the answer is always going to be money. Khabib versus Conor is probably so big that one pay-per-view alone probably amounts to as much of a windfall as probably all of the pay-per-views last year, something like that, you know, or pretty close to. That's how big it is. And I think if they can land it, then they probably meet so many bonuses. They make a ton of money. It's just an incredible shiny diamond for the company to make it happen. And I think he needs to play all the dirty games possible, whether it's playing in the media and downplaying somebody, or trying to motivate somebody to unretire, or you know what I mean? And I think he's trying everything possible. But in the end, he should have met Khabib earlier. And I don't know if he thought this was the setting that would maybe warm the engines up a little bit, you know, get the juices flowing, like they say. It's fight week and everybody's there, and maybe a confrontation here, or just someone getting animated. All of a sudden, Khabib walks in and says, give me $20 million, I'm fighting, you know. But maybe that's a strategy. who knows? But I thought his plan B should have been a little bit more along the lines of, well, if Habib's out, then this is it. This is it. They're already going five rounds. You know, so yeah, did we miss out on some marketing and some advertising? Sure, we did. But still, in the end, I think that's better than coming out of that with a winner who's not a champion and a champion reiterating that he's retired.
Yeah, and then even if he gives Dana White that response, if he says, I'm done, at the end of this fight, you don't think they're going to revisit that again and we're going to go through this whole bullshit again for another 2-3 weeks before another fight is announced? Like, it's just really, really silly to me that that all that's going on. And at the end of the day, it's like, just give us what we want. Just give us a damn champion. If you really want Habib back that bad, I honestly think a good way of maybe poking the bear is have somebody put his belt on in front of him. That might be enough to go, I didn't like that. That's my belt. You know, maybe that gets him back. I don't know. But just to not have anything at all.
True.
It's just kind of silly to me.
It's true. So, yeah, there you have it, folks. UFC 257 will not be for a title under any conditions, whether obviously if Habib's still the champ, if he convinces Habib to stick around, then we already have our undisputed champ. So it wouldn't even be for an interim. It's not going to be for the undisputed if Habib tells him that he is out, you know, firmly. It's just a main event, five rounds, and I guess the winner, if Habib opts out, will just get the next ranked champion. Who could that be? Maybe the winner of the co-main event, you know, which I have no problem with that. Chandler versus Hooker are two very credible lightweights. Hooker's not coming off a win because he lost to Poirier. He beat Felder earlier in the year, so he went 1-1 in 2020. But he had a nice streak, you know, before the Poirier loss. And then Chandler's coming off a win. He defeated Benson Henderson in his last fight over at Bellator. You got Gaethje and Ferguson coming off losses. Those are the other two perennial powerhouses for the last few years. And then you got kind of like that next batch of fighters who can definitely boast win streaks or whatever you need. They're just not pay-per-view magnets yet, I'll say, because they can always become one. But at this moment, your Diego Fajeras, Islam Makhachev's, Benil Dariush's, they're not at the level, I guess, of the guys that we announced earlier. So I don't know. It's disappointing. This is the marquee division in the UFC. I know I always trumpet featherweight, bantamweight, welterweight, but look, you can always point to social media, financials, and just the power of the lightweight division with Conor McGregor and Habib Nurmagomedov the last few years, your Nate Diaz's and everybody else, can't leave out Felder, Kevin Lee, all these guys. That's the marquee division, and that division has just been misplayed. It's been jinxed. Some fighters haven't made weight. Fighters have gotten injured on fight week. You know, there's been these long lulls. Man, I wish I could. I think the last 5 years, if you would have played the hands right, I think we could have squeezed out like four more title fights should have taken place in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a prediction. In 2021, Charles Oliveira will be the champion.
Oh, I forgot about him. Yeah.
I think you mentioned him at the very beginning, the lightweight division. I think that guy's on a run right now. I think he's a terror. And I think no matter who's up top, he just has a skill set that can really bother people. It's really hard to prepare for because he's so good at it. So I think being long and lanky, I think that dude's going to be champ this year.
And strong. I used to call him skinny, long, lanky. You know, I hadn't made it to wiry. He's wiry now. Wiry means good, by the way. That's strong. But man, those takedowns against Tony Ferguson, I know I keep bringing them up, but I never expected them. I know Charles is great off his back. Oh man, do you want to spend too much time down there? He's great off his back. Shit, how about if he slams the shit out of you and now he's in top position and he can do what he wants to you? You know, that's what he's developed. So he's long, lanky, but he's strong, and that wrestling game is really, really nice. And by the way, his manager said late last week, we don't want Gaethje. We want to fight the winner. So good for him. See how excited I am? I was already starting the next sentence. Good for him. However, I just wish he had learned a little bit of English. And I don't need him to be Fraser Crane, you know, or anything like that. I don't need him to be some wordsmith. I just need him to be funny and charming and cute at times, or whatever you want to call it. I'll give you an example. When Joanna was up in Zhang Weili's face, you know, I think they were doing a pose off or standing next to each other, maybe facing. I can't remember what it was. And Joanna kept chirping and chirping and chirping, and she just goes, "Shut up." Those two lines, those two words were perfect at the time. Just give us stuff like that every once in a while. But I swear, every time he's won a fight or had something to say, he says what he has to say, and then the translator. And then at the end, I think we've gotten like a thank you, you know, at the most out of him. But I think he could be a big star. He's young and he's exciting.
You know, when Anderson Silva had his first fight in the UFC, it was against Chris Leben. He didn't speak a lick of English, but he left the lasting impression with that little guitar dance that he did and all that. Like, he left some sort of swag behind that throughout the years, as he started to learn English little by little here and there, he just carried a certain swag that I think Charles has. I think he can do it. I just wish, yeah, a little bit more would come out. I think he'd be more likable.
Yeah. Appealing for sure, because I've liked him. I've respected his skill sets. I thought he came up short in big fights, but now he's turned a corner. So, you know, he could definitely be that guy. I think your Gagey's of the world. Well, I shouldn't say this because Tony didn't turn him down. He fought him. So I don't know. I was going to say maybe the top three guys might still not be excited to fight him, but because he's dangerous and he's not really a pay-per-view draw. Like, I bet you Nate Diaz would go, "Who?" You know, those guys like to play that line. "Who?" But whatever. Look, circling back, Poirier versus McGregor, not for the title, sucks. That's all I can say. And Oliveira's manager saying, "We don't want Gagey. We want to fight for the title next." I think the UFC might still make him take a fight, but you never know, because now there's the possibility of Khabib says, "No, I'm retired, Dana." McGregor fights Poirier, and one guy beats the other definitively. So there's no sense for an immediate rematch. Then if Chandler versus Hooker sucks, somebody wins, but it's not, you know, a great fight, then Oliveira could very easily be next and not have to fight Justin Gagey. However, if Hooker versus Chandler is a classic and Poirier versus McGregor is a classic, you know, and then they have to figure out, well, who's healthy or who can go or whatever. And Khabib does stick around. Boy, Oliveira may have just gone from next to like the third option.
Yeah. No, it all comes down to that. It's funny how somebody that could be on that type of role could just take a step back. But you know what? I think whoever comes out of Chandler Hooker, I think it's going to be a bloodbath. I think those guys are going to beat the crap out of each other. And it's going to be, I think, Dan Hooker's third type of fight like that. I mean, I don't know how many of those he can sustain. So I think whoever comes out of that is going to be a little battered, but I still haven't made up my mind who I think is going to win. The way I've been looking at it, I think the best Michael Chandler beats the best Dan Hooker, but I just don't know if we're going to see the best Michael Chandler. That's the problem. I don't know. It's a tough fight, but it's definitely going to be worth. I think the UFC did a good thing in signing him. I think it's going to be worth their money, and I think it's just that type of fight that makes you
want everybody to win. Huh? Everybody wins with Michael Chandler coming over, yeah. Including Michael Chandler, who can finally answer, can I hang with the best? He could lose this first one, and we could still say he could hang with the best if he wins his next three. A 3-1 run would be great. A 4-0 run would be epic. You know, a 2-2 run might even still give him the satisfaction. He, you know, especially depending on who are the two that you beat. But I think he really wanted to know how he would do in the UFC, and now he finally gets that. So that's good for him. You know, Hooker has length on him, reach on him, and I mean, I know we're 2 weeks away from the fight, but still, as I picture it, if it goes five rounds and he was able to utilize that, Chandler may have some struggles for sure, especially if Hooker can get those leg kicks going. But if the fight is more close quarters, which in Abu Dhabi, I think they're going to use the bigger octagon, and he wrestles more, then I think this one can definitely go Michael Chandler's way. And Michael Chandler has the one punch KO still that's live at any point. He's got it and he's used it. So you got to look out for it.
I want to ask you a question about what they're doing out there in Abu Dhabi. So they're going to have fans now, right? And it's not quite the bubble that they had the last time they were there. There's a small area where nobody really goes into, but for the most part, that whole 15-mile radius or whatever, that doesn't exist anymore, right?
No, it's so just their hotel, the fighter hotel, the everyone else hotel, and the Etihad Arena. Those mm-hmm. three are, I guess, have strict security, you know? And I think you're stuck between traveling amongst that. I don't know that you can go, hey, I'm going to go take a look at the beach or the F1 racetrack. I'm not so sure about that.
Are all three cards going to have fans?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, what I'm getting at with that is
it's going to be Vegas again, basically. Fighter Hotel, Arena, and I guess the PI, you know, because I guess the Fighter Hotel is a little bit different from some media and some of the staff, perhaps, is what I'm hearing. I just heard there was two hotels.
I feel like I'm glad that we're moving in that direction. But boy, that seems like a big risk putting all those people, and then the UFC staff has to be somewhere in that arena, right? If anybody there contracts something, it could really, really just get that ball rolling with a lot of infections. I'm very nervous about it. I hope everything comes out okay. And I love the fact that little by little, maybe we can introduce fans again, but this will probably prove a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess with the fans, if using the correct spacing and keeping them away from the fighters, then, because I don't know, how do you, if I'm a fan, do I have to check in to my hotel a few days early and not be able to leave? You know, I don't know that those are all the, you know, we just found that out today, folks, about an hour ago. So I like these follow-up questions because I can ask our guys. We got two of our guys out in Fight Island, John Morgan and Mike Bond are both there, and we can ask them those questions because there is no high five and there is no, you know what I mean? The fighters can't come too close in contact with the fans and risk then going back to the hotel where you're moving around with other fighters that might be on the Wednesday card or the next Saturday card, or you know what I mean? I think they have to be really, really careful of that. So, but without knowing all the facts, I don't want to just act like it's in any way this is irresponsible, because we don't know. It seemed like they were really, really had a tight ship the last two times they've been there. So we got to give them credit for that, and they probably have worked on a lot of these details.
Well, George and I normally do our show from the Mandalay Bay. We have our own arena there, and then we're very close to the other. We've been around a lot of arenas. And what I'm getting at is normally you have a staff that works with the fighters and all that. And I'm sure they were probably part of that bubble initially. But when you bring in fans, you're going to need another staff that deals with fans, right? People got to sell them popcorn or whatever it is they have over there, right? Or get them to their seat, ushers. That staff is going to interact with the other staff, which, you know, it may not be direct contact with the UFC and their staff, but those two staffs could be intermingling. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's probably a big risk, everything they're doing right now, but I hope it all turns out well.
Well, if the W Hotel, if that's where they're back and that's its own bubble, I heard it's a first-class facility, five-star facility, and they have everything they need there. So the fighters don't have to leave it. And if the fighters can be ushered through a part of the arena where they are just going straight to the octagon and out and not crossing over, like with what you said, vendors, fans, any staff that's working with them, then great. But yeah, all it takes is one chance, so they better be very, very careful. All right, let's give you some fun facts and figures here on each of these cards that are coming up. I'd rather say it now, Thursday. You know, the more we do it, the better. That way we don't catch anybody off guard. And as I find my window, I want to let everybody know that Goz and I will be hosting a UFC 257 watch-along here on Sportscaster. So that's January 23rd for Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier. In fact, since I'm already talking about it, I'll start with that one. That one's on the 23rd, and it's Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, the standard pay-per-view time. That means they'll go late in the morning over there so that they can bring you the time difference. So they'll probably be fighting like at 8 a.m., I have to imagine, out in Fight Island so that we get the proper pay-per-view time of 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. So that's when we'll be doing our watch along on Sportscaster. Michael Chandler, Dan Hooker, also on the card in the co-main event. And now I'm going to go back to this Saturday. This Saturday, January 16th, it's Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar at the Etihad Arena. ABC ESPN Plus has you covered for this fight card. Now, on ESPN Plus, this Saturday, the fights start at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Looks like you're going to get about 8 fights on that on those prelims. 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Saturday. And then they turn it over to ABC at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. And that has 5 fights on that fight card with Max Holloway, Calvin Kattar, Matt Brown, and Carlos Condit. That's your main event and co-main event. The following Thursday, January 19th, excuse me, 20th. Sorry, Wednesday the 20th. It's Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny. And this fight card is on ESPN and ESPN Plus. On ESPN Plus at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, you heard that right, folks. You're going to get 7 prelim fights on ESPN Plus. Then at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Wednesday, the 20th, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, you got Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny. So they're going to probably go on local time for them. This is going to be a prime time event for that part of the world. In fact, both of them are. And then the pay-per-view shifts to a completely different time, and that's 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific on the following Saturday. So 3 events in 8 days. It's going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm. But we love it. That's what's awesome.
Oh, yeah. We'll be tuning in, man. I'm used to 6 a.m. is not that early for me, man. I wake up at 4:30 sometimes to watch Manchester United, so that I have no problem with that.
Throw in some playoffs, some NFL playoffs. I'm excited.
Hey, real quick, what'd you think of those scores? What'd you think of those games? Some upsets?
I thought they were good. I thought the whole weekend was pretty good. I mean, even last night's game at some point made you think, wait a minute, are these guys going to actually come back? Because we all know how the Browns can be cursed sometimes. But I thought every game was pretty damn decent. I think every team had a pretty good shot in every game.
The Browns were up 35-23 and had just punted. And Pittsburgh had some momentum. I think if Pittsburgh takes that ball and scores, it would have been 35-30 with still more than a quarter left. It was around that time. It was late third, or maybe it just crossed over to the fourth. So they had plenty of time to play D and then come back and score again. But Pittsburgh had to punt. Cleveland got another touchdown and made it a 3-touchdown deficit. And I think that was just going to be too much. They were just running out of time. But, yeah, Pittsburgh was starting to mount a little bit of a comeback. And that was, I think, the crucial turning point of the game. I don't know if I saw turning point this year on NBC. Did you?
No.
You ever seen turning point?
Yeah.
Shit, I don't know if I saw it this year. I got thrown off my game because we scaled down our DirecTV. So I didn't even watch Inside the NFL all year because no showtime. We got showtime.
Yeah, on the little guy.
Oh, see, I'm always watching the DirecTV, so I missed it. That's one of my favorite shows on Tuesday. I guess it's too late to go back now, right? Maybe I can watch them for the last few weeks, but yeah. Did you watch them?
Yeah, not every single one, but I saw a couple.
Did you ever see the show Turning Point on NBC, its rival over the last few years?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. I don't catch it all the time, but when I have, I've been pleasantly pleased. They go over the X's and O's, and I think it's a nice compliment to Inside the NFL. But, yeah, I just thought about that. That would have been the turning point. So congrats to, let's see, the Bills, the Rams. That was Saturday. And then Saturday night was Tampa defeated the Washington football team. And then yesterday we had Tennessee, man. I thought they were going to do it again, but Lamar Jackson, I didn't realize that was his first playoff win. He moves on. The Baltimore Ravens move on. New Orleans had an easy time with Chicago. And then the night game, Cleveland versus Pittsburgh. So there you have it. All three of those teams from Saturday and Sunday. And then you throw in the high-ranked teams on each conference, which was Green Bay and KC, and you're left with 4-4. Now we go to the divisional playoffs on Saturday. So, yeah, you're right, goes. Football, then on Saturday with Cater versus Holloway. Oh, that's early. It's going to be a busy afternoon and morning. Sunday football, Wednesday, yeah. Hey, tonight's the national championship game, Ohio State versus Alabama.
Boy, college sports have been – they were battered this year, man. It wasn't the same. Kudos to professional sports for getting things back on track and all that, but college sports was a lot to ask for, and it didn't really turn out that well.
Who are you rooting for?
Ohio State.
Yeah, and you know, I probably dislike Ohio State more than Alabama, but I don't like it when one team just crushes it over and over. So I'll probably root for Ohio State. Plus, Big Ralph's an Ohio State guy, so I'll root for him.
So it was Cold Coffee. He went there.
Oh, yeah, Cold Coffee. Yeah. All right. He didn't mention it at all today on Spinning Back Click. He must not really follow the team because I would have been thumping my chest.
Yeah, he's still on a high for the Browns.
He did mention them. Yeah, congrats to all Browns fans. All right, let's bring it back to MMA. Mystic Mac is back, goes. He says under 60 seconds. He'll take out Dustin Poirier. That a bit much?
No, because nobody's really going to care about the time. It's just the fact that he's trying to put something out there that's going to bother Dustin Poirier, right? And that's what makes Conor so brilliant. Now, here's where Dustin's a little brilliant. And it depends because he's played both roles. When you see Conor McGregor and him try and get under Floyd Mayweather's skin, it didn't work for him because Floyd never fought back. Floyd never said anything back, and it was actually working against Conor McGregor. I think
Floyd would grab the mic and do his little round of talking trash.
He'd do his thing, but remember how much he endured when Conor would just say shit and he'd just sit there and smile. He even rubbed his head. He didn't do nothing. Those types of things, when they don't have the payoff, it confuses the person that's trying to do it, right? Mm-hmm. If Dustin can stay quiet in all this, I think it can actually have a reverse role on Conor, because don't forget, like, it wasn't that long ago that Conor was kind of getting ragdolled by Habib. Like, that's something that I think he probably wants to shed as well and just get back to being that dominant Conor McGregor. Right now, I think we look at him as a guy that is a great fighter, but we do know that there's kryptonite out there in this world for him, and I think he wants you to forget about that. So he wants to have a good performance too. But I actually think Dustin Poirier can flip the script on him a little bit if he just doesn't play into his games. But that being said, no matter what, whether Dustin fires back or not, it's still going to get in Dustin's head a little bit. I think that is that's something that's just really, really, really hard to forget. I don't know that you can. I would actually say embrace the moment. Don't try and forget it.
Yeah. Well, they both have improved since then. He's got one punch KO power. It could happen in less than 60 seconds, but I doubt it will. I think I would just stick to I think I'd give myself that out. Oh, he'll be done in the first round, you know, maybe even the first 60 seconds. Then when you grab the mic, you can say, did I tell you? Did I not tell you? Because you kind of covered yourself if you get it done in 60 seconds. But if not, you got at least the whole 5 minutes to play with in the first round. That's plenty of time to take someone out. Now, if it goes past the first round, if you're holding a Dustin Poirier ticket, I think you're going to feel a lot better. You know, I think that first round is going to be the key right there for Dustin Poirier.
Does this fight make or break for Dustin Poirier's career? Can he bounce back from a loss?
Yes, because he's bounced back from other ones. He bounced back from the McGregor loss. He got iced by Michael Johnson. And then he once again came back after Habib. I mean, he took out a tough Dan Hooker. So, yeah, he has been able to answer the bell. He did wear gold at one time with the interim belt So he's accomplished that goal. I think he's already not involved in talks that involve Khabib and John Jones and GSP, and I don't think he can get there because he would have had to have had some success at featherweight and lightweight, you know, high level. But he can still he'll still be an all-time favorite for fans. And if he can just get the lightweight title, his career will be nice. I mean, I'm talking really nice and probably Hall of Fame. It's just, you know, he's taken some losses. And he's, like I say, he's just not in that elite company of some of those other names that I mentioned that have never lost or won two different belts or whatever. So he'll never be a failure or anything like that. He's already had an awesome career, honestly. I used to think that, being undefeated was really, really important and all these title belts. But I really think there's something to be said for when you're at a UFC expo or at the fights as a fan or whatever, and that crowd just roars for you if they see you on the screen or they all come running to you and they can identify with you. Man, when you and Alvarez were going at it, or how about the time that you and Pettis were all bloody? You know, I was there when you fought so-and-so, and you can relive these great moments, you know, of great fights. That's tremendous. And that's what those guys like Duran can do. Dustin Poirier, you know, a lot of the guys that have been involved, Vanderlei Silva, you know, you don't even care that somebody may have ended on a 1-4 skid because they really, really put themselves out there and tested themselves. And you can still have great crowds for these undefeated fighters or these, you know, these other fighters that played the game a little bit. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to be involved in those conversations. But I still think there's some satisfaction to be said for fighting the best and never backing down from any matchup either.
But he – think about that road back to another title shot. Like some of the names we just said, right? Like Oliveira – Tony Ferguson, the winner of Chandler Hooker. That is a long fucking road to get back to where he wants to be. And then you got the guys behind you, right? Like, hey, you got Paul Felder. That's a tough, tough out, man. I feel like a loss here is going to devastate that kid.
I think it'll devastate him more because it's McGregor. As far as like, it'll just be a loss. Yeah, it'll devastate him either way for sure. And yeah, the road's always going to be longer, but he just lost to Khabib a year ago, a little over a year ago. And since then, he only beat Hooker. And technically, this could have been for a title, like we just finished saying when we started the show. So the road to the title wasn't too bad there. However, if he were to lose to Khabib, beat Hooker, and then lose to Conor, then yeah, now you're probably adding at least a couple. But because he's Dustin Poirier and he's got great fights, it's more about being in the right place at the right time. He owns a win over Justin Gaethje as well. He owns the win over Dan Hooker. You know, so if any of those guys have any type of success, then there's a little bit of that road. Similar to Holloway. Holloway, if he loses to Cater, he's 1-4 in his last five, twice to the champ. You'd be thinking, man, how's he going to get near a title? Here's how. Because if he beats Cater and Ortega beats Volkanovski, the champ is the guy who he's beaten. So now all of a sudden he's back in the game. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, she's praying that that Zhang Weili beats Rose Namajunas because she's lost twice to Rose Namajunas. She has a better chance of going, hey, me and Zhang Weili had the fight of the year, you know, and it was close. Let's run it back. You know, with Rose, it was very, very definitive. So it's all about just those key wins that can help your case when the opportunity arises.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, let's see here. I got a little bit of some of these news stories here that have been popping up. Diego Sanchez says, that's it. No mas. One more. It hurts. He wants to give somebody one more nightmare, and then it's over. He had just signed a contract, and I don't know if it was 4, 6, 8, 2, whatever. It doesn't matter because he's saying the next one, and that's it. He's done. And he says, I'm going to let Dana White decide. He's not even tossing out names or anyone. But let's say Dana White goes, I'm busy. Goes, you figure it out. Who would you throw him in there against?
At 170 or 155?
170.
170?
170, 165, whatever you want.
Well, honestly, the name that I would love to see him fight also does 170 and 155. I'd like to see him fight Paul Felder. I think that'd be fun. I just think they're both going to go out there and scrap. It's the type of fight that Diego wants. And right now, Felder needs to kind of find something that's going to maybe buy a little time while these other guys at the top are picking each other off. So I might do something like that, or a different name other than that. I'm not one of those guys that subscribes to you got to give the guy a soft fight so that he can end his career off a win. I don't think that does anything for anyone. I don't think it'll do anything for Diego. I don't think it does anything for the UFC. I think that dude wants to be tested. So, I mean, that's the name that I like, but I'm sure there's a bunch more.
I'm going to go left field on you and say maybe that'll draw Nick Diaz. Two OGs going back at it. Mm-hmm. Brown and Condit would be names that would kind of come out of my mouth, I guess.
I don't think you'd fight Condit, though, right?
Right. Well, they're both New Mexico guys, and they used to be rival gym guys, but that's not the case any longer. So I don't think he would fight him. Didn't we ask this question to Tim Means? Do you remember if he gave us an answer?
I think Tim Means said he'd be willing to do anything so long as it ends there, right? Something like.
Yeah, he wasn't really big on fanning the flames on that rivalry. But it's like I say, the gyms, they don't really hate each other. And he actually gave us a history of how that gym was. They were actually connected before. And then we heard there was a little bit of a rivalry. And I think now everybody's had success and made money. So it's not really like with Matt Brown, the only thing I was thinking was he's an OG. He could be maybe a rematch, which is the same thing that would be happening with my suggestion earlier of Nick Diaz.
I wish
he beat Diaz, but he lost to Brown, so it's a rematch in either way. But I'm just saying something to draw Diaz out. Like if Dana goes, all right, big mouth, he said you're ready to go, or your manager said you're ready to go, you and Diego, come on.
I wish Ellenberger was still around because that was a great fight. You know, I think you could
draw him out.
I don't think so. I had a conversation with him not too long ago where I tried to play devil's advocate a little bit and pick at him.
What'd he say?
I'm retired.
Firm like that?
Pretty convincing.
That was a classic.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. No disrespect, but I might shoot him a text just to see after the show and see what he says. It'd be interesting. All right. So, yeah, Diego, one more fight and he's out. There's no fight that's been made as of yet. That's just kind of what he said. And Robert Whittaker is going to have to take a fight, goes according to Dana White. So Whittaker lost his title to Israel Adesanya. Then he comes back and beats Darren Till, Liverpool. And he beats Jared Cannonier. He was supposed to fight Izzy. They offered it to him, but he said, ooh, can we do this? Because I have a kid coming in March, at least according to Whittaker. And somehow it didn't fit with the UFC's plan. So the UFC, nah, we're going with Izzy versus Jan Blachowicz. Now you got to take another fight.
I don't see why he would take another fight. I would just wait it out. Wouldn't you?
I don't think he has that chance, that opportunity.
He's got till March, right? He's got a new kid. Not like he needs money that I know of. I imagine he's probably pretty well off. Who are you going to fight? And what can you possibly do that's going to prove more than the last two cats you went through?
I know, but I don't know that him playing the waiting game is going to work is what I'm saying. He can do it. Yeah, he probably financially could afford it, but there's a strong possibility Israel Adesanya could win and he may want to stay there, or maybe the UFC's already identified Israel versus Jones at some point. Who knows, man. But you're right. I mean, he's got a good lock on number one contender at middleweight, but for some reason Dana White keeps pushing, nope, he's going to have to take another fight. And I just know that guy. He's pretty stubborn, and if that's what he said, that's probably what's going to have to happen.
I mean, I would hate to pick off contenders, but honestly, him and Marvin Vettori would be an absolute barn burner. I think that'd be a great fight, but I just, as his manager, I don't know that I would convince him that that's a fight he would want to take. That's a tough matchup.
All right, folks, I'm going to continue here. Remember, Michael Chandler is going to be joining us in a few minutes. We'll talk to him about his preparations for – Dustin Poirier. However, to reiterate some of the earlier news, Dustin Poirier. He's going to be facing Dan Hooker. Dustin Poirier is fighting Conor McGregor. By the way, that won't be for the title, despite what Khabib Nurmagomedov says to Dana White as far as unretiring, whether he stays retired or comes back. That's it. This fight is not for title, and that's very, very disappointing. There's also been a round of matchups that have been done by our guy Nolan King. These are matchups that were made in the last week. Some of them are kind of like fill-in fights. No, I didn't phrase that right. Some of these are fights where somebody was injured and somebody's stepping in on late notice. And some of these are fresh fights. So on the January 16th card, Li Jingliang is going to be facing Santiago Ponzinibbio. Betch Kohea is out. All right, so Jocelyn Edwards is going to step in to fight Yu Wu Yunnan. On the January 20th show, which is Wednesday, it's going to be Warley Alves versus Munir Lazez. Gaetano Perello is going to be facing Ricky Simone. Let's give some love to MMA Fighting for breaking that one. They also broke to Santiago Ponzinibbio and Li Jingliang fights. It's noted here in the story, so I'll just follow suit. Ooh. Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. UFC 258. We believe it's going to be February 13th. We're not sure where, but more than likely back in Las Vegas. Diego Lima versus Bilal Muhammad. That was broken on the Anik and Florian podcast. You back, Oz?
I think so. Am I?
There you go. Yeah, you're good. You're good. Perfect.
Who's Ricky Simone fighting?
Say what?
Who was Ricky Simone fighting?
Gaetano Perello.
Doesn't that sound like a battle between like two artists or some sculptures?
Yeah. Hey, this is a beautiful drawing. Who drew that? That was the work of Gaetano Perello. Sounds like it, right?
It does.
On February 20th, a fight night. It's going to be Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis, Sergey Spivak versus Jared Vander Aa, Andre Arlovsky versus Tom Aspinall, all heavyweights. On February 20th. On March 6th, UFC 259, Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. Shout out to Junkie for breaking that one. The other ones go to ESPN and MMA Fighting over there in the heavyweights. And then we got, let's see here, there's one more. Amanda Lemos versus Livina Souza. Those are women's strawweights. Combate, courtesy of them. March 20th, Julia Avila versus Julia Stolarenko, MMA Fighting on that one. So there you have it. Those are some fights that broke or some replacement fights that were made within the last week. It's called The Roundup by Nolan King. Check it out. He does a really, really great job. Hey. All right, guys. I already got the confirmation from Michael Chandler. He was actually wrapping up a workout. This has to be probably one of his final workouts before he starts heading over to Fight Island. So we're going to get him fresh off a workout.
Oh, nice. All right. I was going to ask you, without getting too political, do you like the crossover of politics into mixed martial arts? And do you believe Jorge Masvidal when he says, "Man, I'll leave Twitter and this and that," and all that? Like, where do you stand on all that?
I'm glad you asked me that.
Oh, I know you are.
I wanted to ask you a question because I used to read the iTunes reviews, but iTunes kind of did a whole new revamp, and they're not like in this chronological order where I could even look back to see what was done, because I always wanted to give a shout out to anybody that ever left us a review. Those are pretty big when it comes to the algorithm and all that. Luckily, Goz and I have established the show where I believe we're in the top 5% of all shows on Apple Podcasts, which we're proud of. Took us a while, you know, but basically if you have a certain amount of downloads, they tell you you're in the top 5%. Now that, of course, doesn't mean that we're knocking on Rogan's door. I mean, those guys like Carolla and Rogan and whoever else, they're probably way up there, you know, but still, there's just so many podcasts out there. And because of that, we just happen to fall on a 5% mark. But I did notice when I went back and was kind of looking around the new area, there was about four posts that came in, five posts that said, no, these guys went too political, I'm done. Or one star, you know? And I started thinking back, if you follow me on social media, then yes, you've heard me go off. But on this show, I really tried to limit it other than when it came up like, well, Covington's riding in the bus with the Trumps or whatever. But I know I held back on at least like taking a topic and then strangling it and saying this and saying my piece, especially on this show. I think there was carryover from my social media into people leaving those posts. So all I can say is, considering how many hours we've given you guys over 14 years, and especially just how much we do throughout the week, if one little comment or one little tangent really, really threw you off, well then, see ya, I guess, you know? And your one star will just live on, and that's that. But I don't know. I it's just not fair, because think about how much MMA we cover. I mean, we went into some NFL for a second ago. And, I don't think I said, aha, Seahawks go home. I didn't say that. I usually do, but I don't. But I don't think anybody would go, these guys talk too much NFL, or they go on and on about it. I mean, United comes out, they won, they lost. NFL comes out, oh, man, the Niners, the football club, whatever, the Lakers. It comes out because it's part of life. And sometimes we'll just even discuss what's going on with us. But the few times politicals come out, it hasn't been like long-ass rants, and it didn't turn into a political show. So your label, your review was not on par with what happened, and that's not fair. That's all I can say. Again, if you're carrying over what I say when I've done those shows with King Mo on Facebook or whatever, then sure. Yeah, you got a problem with me. Then just unfollow me, I guess. You know, but don't take it out on the show. Don't take it out on Goes, because it's just not fair. Happy now, you tell me, Goes, am I wrong?
Happy birthday to King Mo.
Oh, it's today?
I believe so.
Nice. Happy birthday, King Mo. Welcome to 50. Just kidding. So as far as, well, do you want to say anything about that? You know, am I wrong? Check me if I'm wrong, because I don't think on this show there's been anything more than a tangent or there's been some sort of like this crazy tangent or anything like that.
I think maybe when lockdown started, we might have had a couple here and there. No, but
and even if they did, again, I've always presented the facts. It's not like I pulled shit out of my ass. I've always said, well, this is what the CDC is saying, or John Hopkins is saying, or you know, whatever. I've never come here just lying or being uninformed. That's for sure. But anyway, your question about Masvidal. I think Jorge's been caught up in a lot of fame, a lot of power. And when you get caught up in that world, I think you feel the need when there's a little bit of a drop off to your name being involved in big stories, or you being a mover or a shaker. Then I think every once in a while, yeah, you're going to do things like that just to see, you know. Of course, it seems like politics is kind of a big deal to him right now. I guess he's a loyal Donald Trump guy. And so what Goes is referring to is Donald Trump is off Twitter now. Twitter removed him, and Jorge doesn't like it. So he's saying he's probably on his way out as well. Maybe he did it to just shake things up and stay, you know, in that game a little bit. Maybe he did it to impress the Trumps, or maybe he just really feels that way. Maybe it's a little bit of all of it. But where I feel he's wrong, and so is Trump, is that has nothing to do with the First Amendment, because these are private companies and they have their guidelines of what can be done. And they just felt with what happened last week, they needed to shut that down. But that's not a violation of his right, because Donald Trump could still hold a press briefing and still communicate to the world or to his country, or he could stand on the corner with a megaphone and exercise his first right, you know. But when you're on somebody else's platform, they have certain guidelines, and that's what they chose to do. So, you know, five lives were lost, man, last week. And that's sad.
I was thinking about Colby Covington. Do you miss him?
Yeah.
Look, man, for as much crap as he gets and as much that he gives out as well, I kind of just miss him. I was used to him just being out there saying, doing his thing, and I didn't always agree with it. But when he goes away, the life isn't as exciting.
And he came back with a great win. So right now, if anything, he could kind of be on that little comeback trail a little bit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But yeah, it you know, a lot of what he was saying was tied a little bit to the Trump family, but that doesn't mean that he's not still one of the top welterweights in the world, a former interim champ. He could easily just come back, I mean, and stake his claim as a great fighter. You know what I mean? And just we can leave all that to the side and just say, hey, what did he used to call himself? Twisted Steel, Real, you know, whatever. He could still be that guy.
But, you know, those are two names that have been pretty much linked to each other. And I think I've said this since day one, man. If you're going to make those two guys fight, I would love to see them on The Ultimate Fighter. I think that would be bananas. But they got to fight, man. That's the thing. Like, Masvidal is very similar to Conor McGregor in the sense that I don't think he necessarily has to win every fight because he's got all these different loose ends that he's got to tie up, right? Colby Covington, something's got to come out of that. Leon Edwards, something's got to come out of that, right?
Too much time's going by, though. They're losing prime years.
All you got to do is show that clip again, though, and you're right back where you're at. You're right. They should capitalize on it while it's still fresh. But all you got to do, I mean, to promote it is just show some of them clips, and you're right back there.
Nate Diaz, same thing. These guys are just holding out for the big fight. This isn't the sport to do it. You can be replaced like that. You know, Gilbert Burns wins 4 fights in less than a year, and boom, now he's fighting Kamaru Usman. You know, that was really his shot. I wonder if he doesn't get the COVID and he fights Usman and whoever wins, what would have happened to Masvidal? Would Masvidal's number been met then? I don't know. They met it because they needed – it was the biggest fight card of the year, and they needed something, and it paid off because I think it was the highest scoring fight of the whole year, even topping McGregor versus Cerrone, at least according to their side. But had that not happened, would Jorge have fought all year? You know, what was the incredible year that put him on the map? 2019, baby. Till knocked him out in London. 5-second record knockout of Ben Askren on International Fight Week. BMF versus Nate Diaz. You know, then he comes back and he took that loss. 2020, you could say what you want. Hey, he got paid, blah, blah, blah. He's this, he's that. He's a social media giant. Yes, he is. But listen to him when that fight's over. And he tells Dana White, you got to get me back in here. I know I can beat that guy. That's the fighter in him. That's the competitor in him that you can't take that away. He can say all he wants, but I know he would love to be a world champion. And think about how big he would be. He's already a massive star on social media, but think about how much bigger he would be with that belt around him as well, the real one and the BMF.
That'd be huge. I mean, we've been saying this for years. This is a guy that could have been promoted years ago. Strikeforce did a somewhat decent job. I think even they dropped the ball a little bit. But UFC could have been promoting this guy years ago, and they would have gotten gold. And it's weird because he would do good interviews. Like, he was funny. He always had this. It's not like all of a sudden he just came out of his shell. Like, remember Damian Maia when all of a sudden for a little bit he kind of came out of his shell? Like, this is something Jorge Masvidal's had his whole career. Just people drop the ball on it.
Yeah, I get asked about this a lot, about should they coach. It's a fabulous idea. It is a fabulous idea. But the fact that Colby only fought once in 2020 and Masvidal fought once in 2020, and you tell me that taping hasn't even started and it's not starting till later this year, that means they would have to be involved in the taping. And then the lead up, I mean, we could be looking at 18 months with no Masvidal fight, a guy that's in his upper 30s now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's too long. The fight's made. Make it happen. Covington versus Masvidal now. And let's say they need a rematch for whatever reason. All right, throw them in there as the coaches then. Then we can build up the next fight. But for now, I just don't think the timing is right. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Leon Edwards, we need to see. What a catastrophe, man. Leon Edwards. He's going on. It'll be 2 years by the time he fights.
Wow. good fighter too.
Good fighter, but they'll probably tell him soon you're fighting in March or something. And his last fight was May of 2019. He'll fight in March of 2021. If I'm right, I don't know. Maybe he'll fight in April. UK's on a strict lockdown. I don't know what that means for their athletes, but I don't know. It's just been a long time, you know. So we got to get Leon Edwards back in there versus Khamzat Chimaev or whoever. All right, folks, our guest is ready to go. We will lock him in, and we'll be right back with Michael Chandler, former Bellator lightweight champ, current UFC contender. He's got a big fight coming up against Dan Hooker. We'll talk about that when we come back.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine. And
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Michael Chandler joining us now on the video hotline. What's going on, Iron Mike?
What's up, boys? I'm doing good, man. Just living the dream.
Yeah. All right. So we're about 2 weeks away. You versus Hooker. Tell me how good that feels, that now everything you've always told us about I'm one of the best lightweights in the world, you get a chance to prove that soon.
Yeah, we get an opportunity to find out, you know. Been in the sport a long time, over a decade, going on my 12th year fighting, and had a lot of ups, couple downs, always came back from the adversity or losses. And the door opened, the opportunity presented itself to become a free agent and sign with the UFC. And I did a couple months ago. It seems like forever. I know to you guys, the media, to the fans, even, you know, especially to myself, seems like it's been a long time. And, now we finally get to step inside that UFC octagon here in less than 2 weeks. So it feels good. And, I think Dan Hooker's the perfect opponent. I feel like Abu Dhabi live on pay-per-view with Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier as the headliner. It doesn't get any bigger than that. So it's a great opportunity, and I'm excited to go out there and get into a contest inside the UFC octagon.
What do you think happens on January 23rd involving all four of you that you just named?
Man, I think we're going to have some more clarity in the lightweight division. Listen, you know, us four, myself, Dan Hooker, Connor and Poirier, we are only half of the puzzle. You know, you still got Gaethje out there. You still got Oliveira out there. You still got Tony Ferguson, who's a perennial contender. Obviously, he's on a two-fight skid, but he lost to Charles Oliveira, who is obviously no slouch. He has proven himself to be one of the best in this division. I think we're just going to get some more clarity in what is the most electrifying division in the UFC right now. The lightweight division is the deepest division. The closest thing to a shark tank that you will ever see in mixed martial arts, possibly. So it's great to be a part of it. It's great to have my name thrown right into the hat. It's great to have, you know, being the co-main event on this very large card. That's going to bring a lot of eyeballs and a lot of clarity to the lightweight division. And I'm gonna go out there and put my best foot forward, get into a fight with Dan Hooker. He is a formidable opponent, a great opponent. He is a very tough guy, ton of skills. And then go out there, do my job, get a dominant victory, and then maybe have enough time to shower up. Probably not, just throw my sweats on and run back out to the arena and watch what could be my next opponent in Connor or Poirier or any of those guys. Either way, take my competitor hat off, put my fan hat on, and enjoy another fight. On a big, big night there in Abu Dhabi.
We just found out today that Dana White has already said if Khabib opts to stay retired, the main event will not be for the undisputed title. We had thought that if Habib and Dana met and he said, nope, I'm really done, that they would make a last-minute announcement. And then he also said something along the lines of, I guess whoever wins is in obviously the pole position versus another highly ranked guy. Did you hear the news? And if so, how did you react to it? How did you digest that?
I did not hear that news, and I'm surprised as well. You know, I think anytime, you know, let's call a spade a spade. Conor McGregor is the biggest combat sports icon on the entire planet right now, bigger than any other name that could step inside of a cage, a boxing ring, a Muay Thai fight, a kickboxing fight, a wrestling match. Conor McGregor is the biggest name. So to me, it makes a ton of sense that if Khabib says that he's not coming back, that Dana just announced, hey, the belt's up for grabs, Conor or Poirier. I mean, to me, it makes sense. Poirier to me is obviously one of the top guys, if not the top guy. You know, after we saw Gaethje lose as bad as he did to Khabib, which everybody loses to Khabib. Let's be honest, he's undefeated for a reason. But with Khabib's name out of the picture, it would make sense for me, at least. But I'm not a promoter. I'm the fighter for now. So either way, there's going to be a lot of clarity January 23rd after these two fights happen. And then we kind of see what happens. Obviously, I will be campaigning for a number one contender fight, a title fight. I will be trying to throw my name in the hat to fight any of those guys. Either way, you guys have been following my career for a long time. I'm just excited to be competing in the UFC. I'm excited to be competing with the guys that are the best in the world in the lightweight division at 155 pounds. So if I got to go out there, do my job against Dan Hooker, then I got to do it again against someone else in order to get to that title. So be it. But either way, all roads lead towards January 23rd. And after that, we'll have a little bit more clarity. Then I can start calling some shots.
Michael, all those names that you brought up, I mean, if you look at your division, right, there's Tony Ferguson, there's Charles Oliveira, there's Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier. Are these all names that you feel like eventually you'll probably meet, whether it's now or later at some point? And is there one that really stands out where you say, man, before I put those gloves down on the cage, on the floor, I got to face this dude?
Not necessarily. I mean, obviously, you know, from a business standpoint, you want to fight Conor McGregor. That's the big fight. That's the money fight. But that's not necessarily the fight that I think I necessarily deserve right away, obviously. But, man, any of those guys I would love to compete against. Especially when I go out there and do my job against Dan Hooker, it's going to be kind of – I'm going to be undeniably a guy who should be thrown into that mix to fight any of those guys. And truthfully, I think I got a solid 3 to 5 years left in me, which – isn't a ton of fights. I know it sounds like a long time, but that's not a ton of fights when you're averaging two, maybe three fights a year. So I would love to fight every single guy who's in that top five right away. And then obviously over the next year, we're going to have a new guy coming in from outside the top 10, inside the top 10, and then creeping his way towards the top five. And then the next year, you're going to have the same thing. So these divisions in the UFC are constantly changing. They're constantly moving, you know, but these names that we just said, Gaethje has been in the top five since day one. Poirier has been in the top five for the last 6 years. Conor in the top five the last 6 years. Ferguson, Oliveira just now came into the top five, but he's been hanging around the top 10 in the lightweight division for the last decade. And obviously Dan Hooker has come from top 10 down in towards the top five. And so these divisions are always changing, but all of those names are names that I want to fight. You know, all of those names are exciting fights for the fans. They're exciting fights for me to test myself. They're exciting fights for me to go and enjoy this mixed martial arts career. Win, lose, or draw, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get into a battle and we're going to have a good time and the fans will be entertained.
You know, it wasn't that long ago that you go back and you look at some of the history of Pride Fighting Championship, you see Strikeforce, WEC. When those fighters came along, for so long, we had talked about UFC versus Pride, and some of those fighters even walked out to Pride music. And in talking to them throughout the years, they had to hear the best 155ers are over at the UFC, and the WEC guys didn't like it. And for a while, some of those guys actually said, I felt like I was still representing WEC a little bit, or Strikeforce or Pride. You being a guy that was synonymous with Bellator for so long. Is there even a little percent inside of you that feels like you're sort of representing Bellator a little bit too?
I say this not to discredit Bellator or what, or anything like that, but yeah, it's a very, very small percentage. You know, it's, for me, it's never been about the promotion. It's never been about the promoter. It's always been about me and myself and trying to get to, the best version of myself when I step inside of that cage, inside of the octagon, and be able to provide for my family and truly get as much as I possibly can, out of these talents that I have, out of this body that I was given, and out of this body that I have built, because, you know, I'm a lot closer now towards the end, than I am the beginning. You know, the beginning was back in 2009, I started fighting. So, I'm a lot closer to the end than I am the beginning. So there will come a time, in the next couple years, hopefully not too soon, that I will fight my last fight, and I will take off those gloves in the center of the octagon, and then go back to the back of an arena and have to look in the mirror at myself and say, Michael, did you do everything that you possibly could with the talents that you were given? And I just hope that I can answer truthfully and honestly and without regret. You know, so it's always been about me and my team and the people around me and being able to provide for my family and just carry the torch for every small guy from a small town who was taught to do small things, to be able to go out on big stages and create big impact and have a big dream to do big things. So of course, that question will be answered when I go out there and I beat Dan Hooker, and now I'm inside the top five inside the UFC. Now people will say, okay, well, Bellator has some talent, you know? And then when I win the next fight, whether it's for the title or not for the title, then win that fight and then get to the title shot and then possibly win that title, you know? So obviously, there's a certain part of me that says, yeah, for all these guys out there, because I'm a mixed martial artist and I train around a ton of guys in the small shows on the local circuit. I train with a ton of guys who are in the UFC, a lot of guys who are in Bellator, guys who are in ONE FC, guys who are in the PFL. And the common consensus is we all show up to practice. We all get after it. It doesn't matter what organization you are. We're all equal, and we train hard. And there's days where a guy in the small show gets the better of me, right? Then there's days where I get the better of a guy who might be fighting for the title in the UFC. You know, so the discrepancy the space between the different organizations inside the microcosms of these gyms is just different. And it's much smaller than you think. So the question will be answered about the talent outside of the UFC. But for me, I came to the UFC for one reason and one reason only: the competition, the platform, how big it is, what Dana White has done over the last 25 years to build this organization and make it into the premier mixed martial arts platform on the entire planet is nothing short of amazing. And I am excited to be a part of it and excited to finally step into that octagon.
Finish this sentence. On January 23rd, hardcore MMA fans are going to find out
that Michael Chandler is who he said he was all those years. And every time that I, you know, every time that I said something about being one of the best in the lightweight or one of the best in the world or the best in the world, every time that I said I could hang with the UFC guys or beat a lot of the UFC guys, every time that I said I'm the hardest worker in the room, every time that I said I was born for great things, and people laughed at me and said I was in the B leagues, or they said I was fighting nobodies, or they said I had losses to this guy or losses to that guy, they are going to say, I knew it. The hardcore fans knew it. It's more the casuals who just follow the UFC, who look at me as this, you know, new guy coming in, and I've been fighting outside the UFC, so I must be a nobody. I essentially came from relative obscurity, and in a lot of people's minds, that's how they had their mind made up. So the hardcore fans know who I am. They know my body of work. They know my resume. They will be their opinions of me will be solidified, and the casual fans will say, okay, this guy who we thought was a nobody, he's not that bad.
Last question. Did you do any acting at Missouri at all? Anything that to do with that? Here's why I ask. You got just the right mix of good looks and scars. I think you could be a action star after your fighting career is over.
I did not. No, my brother's an actor though, so I could take some tips and pointers from him. But no, I mean, maybe, you know, we'll see. I've been in some talks with some people here and there. That's always something that I've wanted to do. It's, I've even thought about stunt work. You know, I'd love to throw myself off a building or drive a burning car 100 miles an hour. My wife probably wouldn't want that, nor would it be the smartest thing now that I'm a father, but, you know, you only got one life, so you want to enjoy it. But, you know, we'll see. For now, mixed martial arts, becoming UFC champion is my number one goal, and my number one goal professionally, if you will. And I think a lot of doors will open because of it. And that's just a testament to what the UFC has built and what these guys inside the UFC can do with their lives and with their platform, by getting a couple great wins inside of the biggest mixed martial arts platform on the entire planet.
If them little pipsqueaks like Matt Damon and Tom Cruise, if they can do it, you know what I'm saying? I mean, now a proper fighter, a proper athlete should be on those runaway trains and beating A guys up, you know, right, between the mountains of Ukraine and Russia. I don't know. I'm seeing something in Eastern Europe and you having to save the day.
Okay. Well, hey, let's put a script together, and we'll put a script together. We'll write it around me, and we'll go, man. We'll get some financing. We'll get a budget together. I got a guy who can shoot it, and we'll go. Oh, wow. Let's do it.
Okay.
Hey, Michael, yeah. Be honest with us. 100% honest.
Man, I don't want to be honest.
You've never had some acting and say like an award for best MMA fighter in a groin shot. You never acted a little bit on one of those.
What do you mean?
Who wouldn't do that? You get kicked in
what
the
What do you mean? Like, oh, I get you a little bit more. No, I haven't. But I mean, obviously, you know, you get 5 minutes, so you don't really even need to act. If you get hit in the nuts, you get 5 minutes anyway. So it doesn't matter whether you act or not. For me, it's more acting. For me, it would be more acting like it didn't hurt. You know, I've been kicked in the groin and acted like it didn't hurt, and probably should have taken more time. You know, because we get, you know, you guys know me. I'm a high paced, keep the fight going, wear the other guy out. So if I get kicked in the groin, I'm not trying to give that guy a rest. It's the same reason why I changed out my headgear strap all the time, because the little, what's it called, the thing that snaps, the little snap would get worn out because the sweat would get in there, or like, you know, the stuff from your hair would get in there and it would start to loosen up. So I would change it out every couple weeks to make sure it never came off in a match, because if it comes off in a match, your opponent gets a break. Same reason I made sure I double taped my wrestling shoelaces to make sure those never came untied, because number one, you get a stalling call, and number two, you give your opponent a break. So for me, I want to get that fight going as much as possible, as fast as possible. So if I got to fight a whole round with my crotch hurting in order to wear down my opponent, that's my game plan.
Fun times as always, Michael. Hey, listen, I don't know how many training sessions you have left, but get through those. Have a safe flight to Fight Island. Go out there and do your thing, man. Can't wait to see you versus Dan Hooker. It's going to be a great fight. We're going to be talking to Dan Hooker later on tonight, so it's going to be great to talk to both guys in this huge co-main event and see where their mind's at. But you seem relaxed and ready to go.
Relaxed and ready to go and excited, man. And it's cool. You know, it's great too. You know, you bring up talking to Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker is one of the good ones. You know, he is. I think he's one of those guys. He's a good guy inside the cage, or a good fighter inside the cage, good guy outside the cage. And I just love now fighting in the UFC and getting to fight a guy from across the entire world, the entire planet. And we're going to go out there. We're going to put on a good show for the fans. May the best man win. And then we'll, you know, we'll talk about it after the fight. So enjoy that. And I'll see you guys January 23rd.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
See ya. There you have it, folks. Michael Chandler to end the show. And with that, we're going to get on out of here as well. Thank you so much, as always, for hanging with us every Monday and Thursday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Sometimes we go a little long, but hey, it was because we waited for Michael Chandler. Goes on Twitter and Instagram is at The Goes. I am at MMA Junkie George. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. Give us a follow there. And like I mentioned earlier, if you do catch us on Apple Podcasts, which I used to say iTunes, but now it's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or any of the other platforms that you use to download the show, those comments can help our algorithm. So I'll get back to reading them. I've read them all, so I'll even read the bad ones. Just tell us what we're doing wrong, to be fair, and that way we can improve. But also,
I was going to say, and here on Sportscaster, don't be afraid to start your own channel and do what George and I are doing, right? There's a lot of playoff football going on, and I was having some fun, man, listening to some people talk about what was going on and how passionate they were with their teams. It was really cool to see.
You can build your own studio, folks, because you start off with a laptop. Before you even get to cameras or anything like that, you can do it on a phone, tablet, or laptop. And then it's all just about some of the memorabilia that maybe you've acquired yourself or gifts that you're given, and you can just build these things. You know, I'll probably move this to this side next time, get familiar with it. No longer do I have the plain wall. Right here I'm wearing a gift that I was given by Jenny Andrade, the UFC Octagon girl. And, yeah, MMA bobblehead right here, a little closer. A sign that we had in our studio forever. It's back there as well, MMA Junkie Radio. So that's the fun part, is building your studio and then just some prep work before you turn on your favorite, you know, watch your favorite team. It doesn't have to be a whole sport or a whole league. If you just want to be the Buffalo Bills guy, do it, man. Go out there and do it. You probably know the team inside and out. Have a Buffalo Bills watch along this weekend. They progressed. They won. So have fun with it. And Goes is right. We encourage people to start channels here on Sportscaster. Oh, one last thing. On January 23rd, we'll be doing a watch along for UFC 257. It'll be 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Michael Chandler versus Dan Hooker in the co-main event, and Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier in the main event. So join us then, 10 Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. We'll probably dip in a little bit early and probably watch like 7 fights with you in total. That's January 23rd, our UFC 257 watch along. We're going to get out of here, folks. Enjoy your day. Go out there and be a champion.